I'm just so happy to be here today with William. And I'm continuing my series on this the challenges that are inherent in the world today around finding relationship, thinking about dating, thinking about marriage, thinking about having families in a world that doesn't seem to honor marriage and children as it used to. And so, William, I met you at the Chino conference, and I was hoping that before we get started talking about these other issues, that you could give us a little bit of your background and maybe tell us a bit about who you are, how you got to be where you are, what kind of work you do, and what on earth caused you to end up at the Chino conference.
Absolutely. Awesome. Well, yeah, I love that because we were in the same kind of estuary group, and that was wonderful. And I really appreciated the feminine energy that you brought to that group, both you and oh gosh,
Sevilla.
Sevilla. I can remember her channel name, but I couldn't remember her
Yeah.
first name off the top of my head. You and Sevilla and
A quality
quality
existence. Yeah, there were a
existence. That's
lot of
right.
single guys in that
There were, and there was one older, slightly older guy who was married, who was really wanted to talk about these topics as well, actually, which was helpful because it opened things up. So I actually was raised in the church. So I was raised in the church. My parents both went to church. They actually both weren't going to church until they were engaged, basically. They met in their late 20s and ended up kind of going back through some various circumstances. They had kind of walked away from the church, but as they were looking at marriage and considering what it was and what it should be, they decided that they wanted to kind of re-engage with the church, and that was something that connected them. And they've never looked back. And it's been at the center of their marriage. It's been a part of how they raised me and my two siblings. And so we were all raised in the church. Grew up the oldest of three. I ended up going off to college at 17 for engineering because you know what they say, you're good at math, you're good at science, go to engineering school. And in college, one of the issues that I had, was that there were so many rules and so much structure given to me by my parents and the requirements, not even like mandated explicitly, but implicitly in the fact that I was the one who would drive my siblings and they did a bunch of sports. We had older family members that we were responsible for taking care of. And so my life was so structured, so regular, that when I ended up at college, I remember the first week I was there thinking, man, this is like summer camp, but all the time. There was so much less restriction. And actually it was horrible. It was horrible for me personally. Without kind
Yeah,
of some structure.
it's hard to organize your time if you're not accustomed to being.
Yeah, exactly. And I wasn't really prepared for it, unfortunately. And so it kind of was a slow drift of kind of, I did very well my first year, 2 years. By about the third year, though, some stuff had happened. And my time and attention wasn't focused on school properly. I wasn't going to churches regularly. I wasn't doing a lot of stuff. And then in my there was this decline in my third year, and then in my fourth year, I actually ended up dating a girl who wasn't a believer, and it was really not good. I ended up going quite away. I wasn't answering phone calls from my family because my family wouldn't let me go because they love me and they care about me, but I had that experience of kind of pulling away to go after the things that I wanted. And then that ended with me basically failing out of college. Technicality wise, I didn't get expelled, but I basically couldn't continue the way that I was. So I was 21. I had been, it was my fourth year, wasn't any chance I was going to get it done anytime soon. And so I went home to my parents. I remember my phone hadn't been working, and we had this issue where I was on my parents' phone plan, and they said, we pay for this phone, so if you don't answer our phone calls, why are we going to keep paying for it? It doesn't make any sense. And they're absolutely right. And so I remember my phone stopped working, and I couldn't get to the store to get it fixed. It didn't work for a couple of days, and my mom had tried to reach me. And she had this sense, though, where she was like, she was ready to shut off the phone. She was ready to do everything. She was trying to do everything that she could to try and help from the distance that she was at. But something, I mean, I really think the Lord, the Holy Spirit told her, no, just wait. The day that I got my phone fixed, she called me like almost immediately afterwards, immediately after I got back to my the place where I was staying. And she just said, just come home. And I broke down crying. And I it was the middle of the quarter. I just packed and left. I said, I'll figure out the rest later. I went home and I ended up going back to the church that I grew up in that I hadn't really visited for about 4 years at that point. And I remember there was a family there who were not really that close to me. They were close to my family. And they welcomed me. And they said, William, we're so glad to see you. And it was in the middle of service, and I just like going into service, I should say. And I broke down crying there too. Because to be home, to be in a place where it was safe and where you could stop worrying and stop going off in different directions and focusing on the wrong things, it was so, so healthy. And so I actually ended up figuring out a way within the school system to not fail out completely. I worked full-time construction, some backbreaking labor, including, you know, digging trenches and hauling lumber and working with my body until I could go back I transferred majors, ended up focusing more on things where I was actually making stuff physically into a manufacturing engineering degree that my school offered. So I worked for a year full time, and then I was doing part-time construction and commuting up to 2 hours, depending on traffic, to finish school. And so I really built this discipline at that time. You know, I woke up at the same time every morning, whether it was to go to school or to go to work. I had the similar hour. I didn't do much that wasn't school and work, to be honest, because it was so much that there wasn't much time, but I still went to church every Sunday. I was still with my family. And that made a big difference and kind of got me on the right track. It took me about 2.5 years to finish from there. I graduated and started working in a foundry. So I work in manufacturing. I got a degree in manufacturing engineering, and I work in what's called die casting. It's a type of foundry business where you melt metal and you put it into molds. Die casting, for anyone familiar with manufacturing, is very similar to plastic injection molding, where you have this big machine that opens and closes, and then a way to inject into it. There's a cooling cycle and it opens, except our temperatures are about three times that of what plastic does, because it's about 1200 Fahrenheit for the aluminum that we use. The pressures are way higher. So I make components there. I got hired as a process improvement engineer, did that for a little over 2 years. The president of the company came to me one day and said, I need you to be a manager instead. And I said, I don't want to be a manager. Managing people is hard. People are hard. But God has used it. He's really grown me. He's grown my patience, my ability to see other people's perspectives, my ability to understand that even as we are all made in God's image and given dignity and worth in that way, the hand is not a foot and the leg is not a nose. And there are people who have different talents and different skills. And trying to expect everyone to be everything all the time is a horrible lie of modernity and this kind of flattening out of everything that we see in today's day and age. I've done that as a manager now for coming up close to 5 years. And actually, my company is going to be closing this year. So I'm at a point of ending right now and transition as I consider what comes next. There's a lot of uncertainty still as far as what exactly that looks like. I'm not so worried about work. I'll figure something out. God has been good to me for my whole life. Why would he stop now? But going through times of transition, of course, are times of transition. It's the ending of what came before. It's a death. It's going from an ordered center into the chaos to find a new place. And so that's kind of where I'm at right now. Let's see, what year is it? 2024. About 5 years ago now, I started going to a new church almost accidentally. One of the people that I did construction for when I worked that full year of construction was a pastor. And after I had graduated, I was going to my home, the church I grew up in once again, and was trying to connect with young adults, with people. You know, I would have been 25, 26. And I was trying to connect with people. And the amount of people and the amount of events and the ability to connect, I tried for about a year and a half and wasn't able to really make anything happen there. There wasn't a regular meeting. There was a college group really that was the strongest thing there, but it was very different. And so I was visiting with this pastor because we've kept in touch over the years. He's become a friend of the family. And my sister had just graduated college. And so the both of us were talking about young adult group and like community at church. I mean, he said, you know, our church has a really big young adult group. You should come check it out. And so we ended up checking it out, and it was well-developed, a lot of young people, solid, you know, good teaching, but also a lot of people in service and doing good things. We kind of did both churches a little bit, but then decided that we wanted to do church all at the same place. And so we transitioned, and I've been there for, like I said, about 5 years, and it's been wonderful. So it's a great church. We have a strong biblical counseling ministry, and that kind of perspective on things affects the way that sermons come through and the way that we talk about things. And it's a very kind of important part of how I've continued to grow and develop and think things through. And
now,
so, yeah.
What state do you live in?
I live in California. I live in the Los Angeles area.
Oh, okay.
So Chino. Oh, yeah. That side of the story. So,
you're in the Los Angeles area. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I could, I mean, you're not too far, you know, 6-7 hour drive. So anyways, but yeah.
No, that would be fantastic. I think what would really be fun. I think mm-hmm. I'm maybe the only one in Northern California. I don't know. For a while before COVID, I started mm-hmm. a meetup at my house.
Okay.
To talk about Jordan Peterson and, mm-hmm. at one point we had like 15 people.
Yeah.
We'd have a potluck together and then we'd spend a couple of hours in discussion, and it was completely fantastic.
Yeah. No, that sounds wonderful.
But then COVID happened and I tried to keep it going for a while on Zoom.
It's that not the same.
Was awkward. Just did not work with that many people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people were kind of from all over the Bay Area. The Bay Area is actually quite large geographically. Mm-hmm. And and many of them ended up moving out of state. And so I might be even the only one in this area that's even interested in these things. Mm. I don't know. But
yeah.
I think it would be fun to get together with the people in the Los Angeles basin somewhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe we could have a big party in Santa Barbara or San Luis Obispo or something.
Yeah, something kind of towards the middle. That's
all meet halfway.
Yeah, because I know that John Van Dock has his estuary group that meets regularly. There's some other people in this area that are also involved. So I know that there are a good number of people down in this area. So yeah, no, and it really is better, always better to meet in person rather mm-hmm. than through screens, even though screens are better than nothing, right?
Yes.
So that's like this weird trade-off hierarchy kind of perspective on things.
Yes.
But, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, so you're going to this great church,
mm-hmm.
meeting people,
mm-hmm.
and somehow or other, you got connected up with Estuary and Chino and
yeah.
all that. So how did that happen?
Yeah, so I have read books since I was young. My mother used to take away my books so that I would sleep instead of hiding with a flashlight under the covers and read a book until very the wee hours of the morning. And when I was in college, I ended up actually doing, because I was commuting, I mean, something like 12, 13 hours a week, depending on my class schedule. I got an Audible subscription and I started listening to books like all the time. And so that was one of the things that I did. And then as that kind of developed, it turned into things like podcasts. I never got super huge into any podcasts for long periods. But then it was also YouTube videos, because YouTube, it's a place where you can find things. And so if you watch enough things that are sort of related to certain topics, it'll start to recommend things. And so I actually first got connected. My first video was actually Paul. And it was Paul talking about Jordan Peterson's conversation with Jonathan Peugeot right after he came back from being sick. And that was actually my first introduction. I had not really seen any long versions of Jordan Peterson or Peugeot or anyone else, but it was Paul's commentary on it, which is fascinating because that's not the normal pathway.
Well, I
Since
mean,
then, I've
you had already been living out what Jordan Peterson had been teaching for a long time
yeah.
before you ever heard of Jordan Peterson, right?
In a lot of ways, I had kind
Yeah.
of gone through that experience myself, yeah, without that external, but rather with people that I knew. I mean, with my family, and I remember many conversations with my father talking about, this is what you have to do. This is what it takes, and just kind of laying it out in a similar kind of way. And that's one way in which I'm so blessed. You know what I mean? I'm so blessed to have the family members that also go to church. We go to church together. It's a blessing that words cannot fully encompass. And especially because so many of the people that I know around my age, from my church have family members who they might be the only one who goes to church in their whole family. And that's a unique kind of challenge that I don't directly have. Although one of the things I was talking with my siblings about recently is how one of the advantages that we have is in a certain sense, our ability to love the people that are in our church is not limited to our own bodies, but our family itself is this greater body with which we can love people in ways that they couldn't receive only from us. And so whether that's me, poking my brother to reach out to one of our friends who's been struggling when I don't have the ability to kind of connect with them because of my work schedule, or whether that's inviting people over to Sunday dinners that we do at my family's home so that they can interact with my parents who are believers that are, in their 60s and have been married for 35 years and have that example to lay before them when so few people have that, a good image of what it looks like to have gone that long and still be together and still have a strong marriage. And it's not that my parents' marriage was always perfect. I mean, there was a season where they were taking care of three young children, they were taking care of three older family members. They have multiple siblings each. None of the siblings live in Southern California, and the stress of that put a real strain on their marriage up to the point that they almost lost it, and yet they didn't. And so that also is a beautiful example where they can talk to, my church has many young couples, and they're able to talk to them about some of those difficulties. And so there are ways in which I would be unable to love, but because I'm part of a family, that family can help encompass and love and care for. And it's one of the greatest blessings that I have. And it's something that I have begun to stop taking for granted and start recognizing more so in this last year or so. So it is a beautiful thing. But circling back, so I saw this video from Paul, and I was like, this is really interesting. This is really interesting. I mean, I still do to some degree, but I used to watch a lot of sermons, and things like that on YouTube at that time in particular, and then kind of lecture style things about the Bible or about theology and stuff like that. And so I think that that's part of the reason why it's close enough in the algorithm, Paul's channel, that was part of what connected it, and particularly that conversation that included Jonathan. And so since then, I mean, I've watched a number of videos. I watch Paul the most. I love Paul. I think that Paul doesn't understand at all how important he is as an example of someone who loves well, and yet he is a man. He has hard lines. He has his own rigidity that doesn't bend, and yet he bends everywhere, like almost everywhere. He will give, he will flex, he will meet, he will, but there is a core of him that will not bend. And I think that that image of being a man is something that is so lacking, and it's so beautiful. And so something about him drew me in.
Now, Paul is kind of a great example of that book title. I think the book was by Eugene Peterson called A Long Obedience in the Same Direction.
Yes.
You almost don't
That
even have to read the book. You can just hear the
yes.
title and you know
Yeah.
this is an important idea.
It is. It is. Yeah, well, and that's the other thing. That's another aspect of it as well. I mean, to serve at the same church for 25 years, to be in the same denomination for even longer, there is something beautiful about that. One of the concepts that I've developed as I've watched things more often, and this is actually, I mean, I don't agree with everything in my church because we're human beings. I go to a non-denominational church, which means it's Baptist-like, but not Baptist in some ways. And that has its challenges and its difficulties by its very nature. And including we have many young pastors, but I really don't know that you should be in any position of authority as a normal pattern until you're at least 30. This is something that I have become more convinced of. I think that you can find exceptions, kind of this image of the norm and the fringe, or the normal way and the exceptional way. The center and the fringe, as Peugeot talks about. But I think that it should be much more normal for people to be more developed in who they are before entering positions of leadership, because you kind of settle in a little bit into who you are. There's a lot less significant change that is going to be common when you've had a chance to kind of figure out who you are before you're placed into a position of too much authority or too much responsibility. I think that it's one of the places where we've failed to maintain community. You know, when a community had people that were older, that were connected to people that were younger, and there was kind of a way up through a chain, you could kind of see this progression and it could function according to its ways. And every once in a while, somebody might get, you know, push up a little faster, or some people might kind of fall from grace that were older, but the normal pattern was more consistent. And it is something that, with how often people move, with how disconnected people are from their local community, that is a lot harder to kind of find in today's day and age.
Yeah, and one of the things I really miss, I became a Christian in a little country church. I was 30 years old at the time, and it was a little country church out in the middle of nowhere, like 10 miles from five different towns. So people from five different towns would come out to this little church because it was really the only church in the area that was really proclaiming the gospel strongly and vibrant biblical teaching and everything. But at that church, we would have Sunday morning service. And of course, everybody was together there. The kids would have Sunday school, but Sunday school was before the service. And so the adults and the kids would all have their Sunday school classes, and then we'd all be together in the service, except for the, you know, if they had childcare for the really little ones or something. And then every Sunday evening, we would get back together again, and everybody would just bring some what we call finger food, anything that was sitting around that would be easy to eat, that wouldn't require utensils. We'd have a little get together where we would share testimonies and ask for certain hymns to be sung, and maybe the pastor would give a little 10 minute something or other. And then we'd all get together, all ages would be together in this fellowship hall, and we would see all the little kids and the middle school kids and the high school kids, and we'd all get to know each other, and we knew the older people and the younger people. It was completely transformational.
Yeah.
And then Wednesday nights, we'd all come back again and everybody would have their classes, but you'd see people coming and going. And so it was all family oriented, and it was a gathering. It was a community.
Yeah.
And nowadays, the idea, I guess, has been to pacify different groups and give them people of like mind, and everybody gets stuffed in a silo. So you have the young adults group and the children's group and the high school group, and very little cross-pollination.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real sorrow.
Yeah, I agree completely. I agree completely. And it's something, it's one of the things actually, because I read Screwtape a couple of times when I was in college in particular. And one of the ones that I remember the most is make sure that the generations don't talk to each other.
Oh, really? I forgot.
That's one of the screws. Make sure that the older people don't talk to the younger people, because then they might pass on wisdom, and then they might learn some lessons without having to suffer through the consequences of failing in themselves. And it's something that I think about very often. And like one of the things for myself where I've been trying to live it out is for about a year now, a young man who's quite a few years younger than me at my church that I connected with, and I have been doing regular, the word is too vague, but discipleship, meaning that we get together regularly and we work on, talk about faith, talk about life, what's going on, and consider how to follow Christ better together. You know, the image of discipleship that I have from a season that I had with a pastor as being discipled is the image of Hebrews 12. Because we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, there's this idea in the Christian faith that there's people around us all. So there's people ahead of us, there's people alongside us, and there's people behind us. And the idea of discipleship is this encouraging one another forward. So you can reach forward and help be helped along by those that are ahead of you, and you can reach behind and help pull along those that are behind you. And you can jostle and kind of encourage those that are beside you. And I think that all of those are discipleship. I think, you know, the word itself, disciple, is a follower. And I think even there in Hebrews 12, 2, it says, you know, fixing our eyes on Christ. We all look to Christ. He's the example that we follow. And we do a little bit of what Paul talks about when he says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. We look to others, and then we have others look to us as we're looking to Christ. And ultimately, it all has to kind of orient towards and aim at Christ. And that's what I think, that's the image of discipleship that I have. And I think it's good, and it's healthy, and it's useful. And it's part of the reason why I do think having people that are older in regular relationship is helpful, because they have lived through more. They have seen things that you haven't had a chance to see yet. They have lived with things for longer periods of times than you have. And so you can see an example of what it might look like as you consider how to follow a similar pathway.
Well, so in addition to being involved in your young adult group and being involved in discipling, I know that you've also been thinking a lot about this issue of relationship, and you've actually written a little brief document thinking through some of what are the challenges for today with people in your age group, and maybe we could touch on that a little bit.
Yeah. So I've actually invited out at my church over the years that I've been going there, three different young ladies, and been told essentially thank you, but no thank you, with good reasons, God-honoring responses, careful, you know, things, an opportunity to discuss and consider. It's not been super negative. But after the third one, actually, I found that I had retained a very severe bitterness in my heart towards women. I was so frustrated. I was so angry. I had sought counsel. I had prayed. I had, you know, done my best to pay attention and consider. I had opened it up in such a way that it was, you know, no, without any pressure, any of this other stuff. Right? I had done all these things that I thought were right. And at the time, it was kind of a certain kind of ego and selfishness. Well, if I did all of this right, God owes me. And it's like, no, he doesn't. don't think that way. So I actually remember I went and I was talking with a pastor, one of the pastors at my church. And after a little, we got together for a few hours, actually. We got together to have coffee and catch up because it had been a while. And said, you know, I'm not sure exactly how to say this, but you might need to consider some of what you're expressing and some of what it might be, you know, that there might be something here going on with the way that you're thinking about women in general. And it might be good to talk to some older women and really kind of help reconsider and kind of take a little bit of a break from some of these emotions and get back right on track. And he was absolutely correct. And it took a little while because it was pretty bad. But one of the things that came out of that time of thinking about things was just considering a lot about why is it so hard? You know, I think that this is one of the questions. And I've talked to some of the people at my church about it. And I think that like one of the main reasons it's so hard is it's not obvious when people are available and or interested. You know, we've become so careful with what we're allowed to say and how we're allowed to interact and all of these other things that it's not always obvious. And like one of the things about that is the fact that honestly, everything is co-ed. This is actually harmful because when everything's co-ed, things that are co-ed don't have the same meaning of, oh, this is the time where we're together with the girls or we're together with the boys. And so that's an added thing that comes into those kind of opportunities where you come together. You don't have a lot of events like that anymore. Everything's co-ed all the time. And so like, how do you shift perspective? Where is the arena that is appropriate for considering these things and like being available and knowing that other people are available? And so it's all just mixed together all the time. And there's so much confusion and lack of clarity that comes from that. That's one of the really challenging things. Another one of the challenging things with it is forever. And one of the, what I think might be in my head, the ideal version of kind of social and communal relationship with getting young people to connect with each other is what you might call like a soft arranged marriage, which is where somebody's grandma tells somebody's aunt, your niece should be at the event where my grandson's going to be because they should talk and it might be a good opportunity for them to see if something kind of sparks there. You know, the mother says to the daughter or the father says to the son, well, you know, have you considered this person that you kind of known since you were little? Maybe you haven't thought about it, but you know, you guys are getting older now. And have you ever thought about it? Oh, you know, I haven't. Let me think about that. And it's not like a forcing kind of thing, but rather a creating a space for things to develop, but with more specificity and orientation. And those types of relationships and those types of communities don't really have manifestation in, at least in our country, in, or at least in California, which is what I'm most familiar with.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons for that, and I mean, I guess I would be an example just as well as anybody else, is that the culture has kind of told us that young people aren't interested in our opinions. And so we're a little afraid to venture an opinion and say, you know, I think that you would be just perfect with this other person, right?
Yeah.
My husband and I, though, have had the experience of connecting two couples who have ended up married, and they've both been married for over 15 years. And it was very interesting the way that, and we felt very much like the Lord had brought these people into our lives at certain times in different venues where we could just clearly see. They would never meet each other under normal circumstances.
Yeah.
And yet when we met this one person, God brought the other person to mind. And it was like, well, why did they just pop into my head?
Yeah.
And then you have to have the courage to say, you know, Elaine, are you single? And are you interested in meeting somebody? I mean, it's a very awkward conversation, but, but it was just wonderful to be able to bring them together. And now they have children, these families that wouldn't have been there otherwise. Yeah. But I think especially with our own children, we're a little timid about bringing that up, you know. And, and I think other people in the church, well, other people in the church very seldom have relationships with other families. Unless families become very intentional about doing life together.
Yes.
Then they don't know the other families in the in the community.
Yeah.
So, I used to think for a long time that it was a real shame that the pastors of all the different churches don't get together a couple times a year and say, "Look, I've got five single women over here," and this other pastor says, "I've got single guys," you know, and maybe we could somehow, as a group of churches, have an event where these people would meet each other, because we're living in a world where there are fewer, I think it's growing, but for a long time there were fewer and fewer young people in the church.
Yeah.
And so they want to be faithful. And so they're going faithfully to their church. They're not running around looking for a singles group where they can meet people. Therefore, you need to kind of make a way
for that to
happen. Well, part of my little hope is that maybe by talking to some people like you, and then maybe have some of the ladies on, that you all can kind of get to know each other a little bit, even though, but how would that work if people are from different parts of the country?
Yeah, that's one of the things with online stuff in general, which is really challenging. You know, I know that it has worked for people. They've met online, it's been long distance, and then it's worked out, and that kind of thing can work. But I don't think that that should ever be the norm. I think it should be an exception. I do think that what you're saying, you know, what you're talking about, this idea of making space, setting the arena, you know, I really love the framework of agent and arena. And I think that having arena is one of the way, all of what I describe as like no longer being here, those are all arenic things. You know what I mean? Older women, women, feminine, the feminine is arenic. So women doing those kinds of things, even though they're saying stuff, it's making a stage, it's making an arena for things to happen. And I think it's a beautiful thing. And I think as we've devalued feminine influence and power in modern society and only elevated masculine kind of virtues, the ability to draw people together and make space for people to build relationships is one of the most beautiful feminine virtues. And it's part of what a mother does by making children that then know each other and care about each other. It's one of the things too, where like, I struggle with this a lot because I love my siblings. I get together with my siblings on a regular basis. I talk to my siblings often. We're not identical. We don't have all the same interests, but we care about each other and we relate to each other. And we talk to so many other people that are our age that don't even really care about their siblings. They don't like their siblings. And it's like, there's so much missing connection in today's day and age. And it's become normal to not care for your siblings and things like that. And it's very difficult. But as a microcosm example of how the feminine makes space for relationships to grow, that's another beautiful example of it. And I do think local things are best. You know, one of the things, I love my pastors dearly. My pastors preach well, but more than that, they love well. My pastors are accessible. They speak to our church where they're at. They set up, they do events or they care for things as they're made available. You know, the document that I sent to you was something that I had been asked to put together by an older gentleman at my church who's been in a position of kind of voluntary leadership for a while, as he's considering his new life season as an empty nester, how he and other people in that life stage can be helping at the church. And so I really think things local is the best. Now, having some resources, having some discussions or some ideas or some frameworks that can then be these heavenly in abstract thing that can be implemented into specific communities, I think is helpful. I think that that's where something like the Estuary Protocol is beautiful, because it's this thing that you can take and put somewhere specific. And there's enough detail there that you can take it and then put it somewhere and then it happens. And so working through in that kind of a direction, I think might be one of the best ways to work on something, while still leaving the opportunity open. I mean, not denying the possibility of real connection being made via online, you know, the online medium. Yeah. Because, you know, one of the other things about it that's very challenging, and this is something that I've personally struggled with a lot, is, you know, there's the graph that you can find that gets circulated every so often of how people met their spouse or their romantic partner, I believe, is actually how the data was collected. And every single line trends downward, except two: meeting at church, meeting through family, having friends recommend you, you know, meeting in school, like in elementary school or high school. Those are like all of the ways that people typically met. And all of those graphs, all of those lines, the percentage of people who met that way trend downwards. There's only two lines that are going upwards. One of them is online, and it has this big spike in the late 90s, and then a little bit, and then it's just gone on a significant rise ever since. And then actually one of the other ones, which is quite interesting, is meeting in bars. And it's fascinating because people are like, well, let's go back to how things were, where people met in bars. That was never the normal thing. And that idea is, it's just wrong, historically wrong, and it should be kind of laughed out of the consideration as a traditional way of meeting a romantic spouse. It was an alternative that was put in place as communities started to deteriorate, and it's not something that should be kind of given no problem with anyone who met their spouse in a bar. I have close family friends who did, but it's not the norm. It's not a historical norm. It's not a long-term solution, because you need shared community. You need to have a similar way of understanding the world in order to be able to come together and stay together for your life, because that's what marriage is, especially as a Christian. You know, I believe that quite strongly. And, you know, as far as what you were talking about, as far as connecting young people, you know, my brother has been married for about 6 months now, and both he and his wife were both kind of worked on by an older couple at our church. They kind of said, you know, have you thought about, you know, this young gentleman, or have you thought about this young lady? We think, you know, there might be something there. They decided to kind of give it a go. And now they've been married for a little over 6 months, and they're working towards having their, you know, their first child. And they're in a good place. And so I do think that, you know, those kinds of things are the real traditional way, and also a better way. Because where you're known and where you know others and are known, you know, there's so much more safety in that. Not that things are ever without risk, because we live in the real world, but it's a more beautiful way.
Well, so what do you think about the possibility of estuary becoming more of a co-ed venue?
That's interesting. You know, one of the things, and this is a place where you're exceptional, Karen, as someone who reads and listens and does things in this sphere as a woman, is that you are exceptional. You know, the norm or the mean kind of temperament and kind of proclivities, in some ways, you're on the edge of those for women, because you do these things, and these things are typically more masculine. But at the same time, I know for a fact that you're not that way in every avenue, because of your art and how beautiful it is and how wonderful it is and how expressive it is and all of those different things too. And even the fact that you're a mother and a grand and all of these other things. So it's not to say that, you know, you're only masculine, but in this one specific sphere of reading books by people like Jordan Peterson, you are expressing some of these more masculine traits. There are not so many women, I think, that like to do that, you know? And so I don't know that we could really expect to achieve some sort of parity in the participation across the sexes in a format like Estuary, which is about, in some ways, primarily working through ideas and thinking about things in words, which is a very kind of agentic and masculine thing. Now, does it mean nothing can ever happen? Of course not, because stuff will happen. But I don't know that that's the best format.
I think that there are actually quite a few women that are interested in these ideas.
Yeah.
I think the problem is more that in the way that they are presented sometimes, because they are presented as being, you know, that this is something only men are interested in,
Right.
A lot of women kind of get turned away. But
yeah. And I was very careful not to say only. That
if I send them a Jordan Peterson video or something, they'll say, this is really great stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe they don't have the time to do all of it.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they're working, they've got family or whatever. But, and maybe I self-select the kind of friends that I have. I mean, you know, that's possible too. But I do think that, that there is a way that this material could be presented so that it would be interesting and valuable. Well, here's the thing. I think this is really an important idea, and that is that, you know, Alan was on the other day. One of the things I really like about Alan is that he completely understands the problem with getting so up in our heads about these ideas.
Yes.
And then these ideas become inaccessible to anyone but ourselves.
Yeah.
And I'm married to somebody who works a 60-hour week in technology, and he doesn't have time to think about these ideas or even to talk about them with me. So I have to find a way to take these ideas and make them real in my life in a way that I can live them out with my family members and with my church community, and sometimes even use some of these ideas to open up and enhance some other idea that I might be talking about from scripture or some life lesson. And there are ways to bring these things down to very simple, coherent concepts that are deeply meaningful.
Yes.
And people are always so appreciative when they learn these things, because in a way, this is all really old stuff that's been forever. Right?
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Like one of the deep things is the importance of constraints.
Yeah.
But for thousands of years, necessity is the mother of invention.
Yes.
Always been there, right?
It has. It has.
It's just that we've come to think of these as old cliches. They're not useful.
Yes.
But we can bring this in with new language and a new space for it and present it again in a way that people can receive the deep wisdom that's there.
I agree completely with everything that you just said. Without any, you know, equivocation or caveat. There are a couple of guys at my church that also like to think and are like do the abstract thing. And I remember one of the conversations I had a few years ago was we were talking about kind of theology and kind of, you know, up in the abstract and all of this, you know, philosophy and stuff like that. And I don't even remember the exact topics that we were talking about. But I remember we were together and I kind of was really convicted. I was really convicted. It's like, you know, we spent hours and hours and hours individually thinking about it and then talking about these things. And it was like, but you know what? If this isn't helping me to love God more and then to therefore love other people more, it's useless. I mean, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, it's a clanging gong or a ringing cymbal. It's accomplishing nothing. Mm-hmm. And so like I was kind of overwhelmed by that conviction at that point. And my friend was just kind of listening to me. He was kind of nodding. He was like, no, you're so right. That's a way we need to think about this. And so part of what that has looked like for me, and this is what we've talked about a little bit before, is this idea that like these things are all up in heaven. I mean, they're all up in the abstract. They're in the non-material world, but we have to incarnate them in order for them to be real and be fully what they are in order for us to live out in love. And so like one of the places where I've really tried to work on that myself is a little bit with language. One of the things that I attempt is to always be precise with my language. I am very careful with the words that I choose and the way that I organize them. You will very rarely hear me use superlatives such as always or never or things like this. And part of the people that know me, that are close to me, recognize with that is that when I do use those types of language, it stands out to them because it's an exception rather than the norm. And it means that there's a little bit more beyond of intensity to whatever it is that I'm saying. And as I have done that and then worked with other people around me, it's affected people that are close to me. And they have started to be transformed slightly by that. And one of the ways that I think that particularly is like super helpful, this is an example, hopefully it's connecting well with what you said, because I think it does, is that words preform thought, or in other words, the words that we use have an impact on what it is that we think and believe. Mm-hmm. And so when you go up to someone and you say, you always do this, you always put me down, you always leave dishes dirty in the kitchen, you always ask me to clean up after you or something like that, you're really training yourself and kind of helping yourself to move away from love and move away from the other person. And so being more honest with our language and more accurate and precise actually is helpful because it can prevent certain types of difficulties from arising. And even here, like this is where I said, I was very careful not to say it's only masculine or it's only men, because it isn't. The idea of the center and the fringe or the norm and the exception is one of the most impactful images that I've received from Jonathan Peugeot in particular through Paul. And it's this understanding that there's almost always an exception to the rule. Now, it's actually this asymmetric relationship between not having any exception, and then always, because you can't always have an exception, because then there would be an it's a logical inconsistency. So there has to be some sort of absolute rule at the foundation or at the highest point, which are the same thing. But which is God. God is without exception. God is the highest. God is the most holy. God is the most worthy, the most glorious, the most beautiful, the one that we fix our eyes upon. And so there are certain things that don't have exception. But in almost everything that we experience in the world, there is a norm and there is an exception. And what's happened as I've thought about that too and shared that with other people around me is that I have had opportunities of thinking through something and I think, well, there must be an exception. I have no idea what an exception might be. It's a way of being, it's a type of circumstance, something of that sort. I don't know what the exception is, but I believe that there should be one, even if I can't come up with it. And then one might present itself later on.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what that does is it leaves room for those that are exceptional or on the fringe or a little bit different to still participate and be a part of the whole, because the whole is not just the center, it's the center and the fringe. And then for people who act in a little bit of a different way, they have a mode of being that can be rightly recognized and understood and not be told that it's wrong, even though it's not the norm, that's okay. But it's in equivocating and trying to make being the norm or being the exception good and evil, or eliminating exceptionality that can be very harmful, because God is a creative God. He has made the world with such a breadth of imagination that we can't even fully comprehend it. How dare we say that he has made a mistake when we consider the world that we find ourselves in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so those are two examples where I'm agreeing on this idea of being too much up in the abstract or in the heavens or in the ideas and not making them manifest. We have to live them out. And then as we do, not just in words, but even in the way that we consider and relate to other people, then we can make things change. Now, for relationship stuff, I mean, I am 32 years old. I am not currently seeing anyone. I am someone who very much desires marriage. You know, one of the things I've been thinking about often recently is that I want to steward the desire that God has given me well, which means not holding it too highly and not ignoring it completely either. And so what exactly does that look like? How else might I be preparing myself to be a good husband and a loving father, should I ever be blessed to be married and have children, which I, you know, have a strong desire for? But also, how can I, you know, be preparing myself in disciplines and in finances and in relationships and all of these other ways to be more prepared? But then also, how can I seek that out well? And that's one of the places where, as I've talked about a little bit already here today, it's very challenging to find an answer. Because, you know, people will say, well, just go on a dating app or just do something like that. The big problem with dating apps is that, especially post-swipe dating apps, which I really liked actually from Colin and Simone, is that it encourages such a consumeristic mindset. I'm shopping for the thing that I want. I know exactly what I want and I'm going to filter down for it. And it's like, you don't know what you want. God could surprise you with something completely beyond your expectations and it works beautifully. So stop shopping. I don't like, now I know people who've met on dating apps. I know they've had happy marriages. It's not to say that it's not possible, but the shape of the thing itself causes different difficulties. So anyways, I've been rambling on for a long time. Sorry.
Well, I know one of the difficulties for young women who are looking at dating apps is that there just are no, what you might call decent men on the apps.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the young women I know that are using dating apps, they show me the most shocking things that the young men ask for.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is,
is
completely absurd.
Yes.
It's as though there isn't one single young man who's a traditional thinking, marriage oriented man who wants to be a father. And, you know, I mean, I really don't know what has happened.
Yeah.
Well, I do know what has happened.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm starting to sound like an old lady.
Right. But
what happened to the world anyway?
Yeah.
It
can lead to despair quite easily.
See, I'm in the dark here. This is so weird. I don't have enough light on. Maybe we should call it call it for tonight and come up with a topic that we can talk about at some point in the future when you have a little bit more time.
That would be wonderful.
It's so much fun talking with you.
Like it's I'm my learning, pleasure.
I feel like I'm learning a lot, and I'm pretty eager to talk to some other young people about this same topic. And and if there's any girls out there in the LA basin.
God is one of the things, you know, with my work closing and the difficulties that have come with that, with some of the challenges in relationship with, you know, I had, you talk about your husband working 60 hours. I've been working close to or more than that, and probably will for the next few months as we head towards the, because we have to make parts or else our the company that bought us won't be able to transition properly. And so there's all sorts of responsibility that comes with that. One of the encouragements that I kind of have taken almost as a mantra is God is seated on the throne. God is still seated on the throne. And it's something worth remembering. He is the king. He's the one who made everything. He is the one who will work everything out according to his own will. He declares the end from the beginning. He spoke the world into existence. In him and through him and for him, everything was made that was made. And so
in him, all things hold together and our times are in his hands. Amen. That's one of my favorite. That's got me through many things.
Yeah.
So. And he has laid our boundaries in pleasant places. And those boundaries were formed before the foundations of the world. So
exactly.
So he knows well what you need.
Yep.
And it's been a blessing to talk with you, William. Same. I really appreciate your making time.
Yeah.
Let's do this again soon when you have some time and you're thinking about something that you want to get off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd love to. I'd love to. It's wonderful to talk to you, Karen.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.